good evening, and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Thursday, December 28th, 2023. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Idaho Attorney General Raul Labrador says he'll appeal U.S. District Judge Windmill's preliminary injunction against the new state anti-trans health care law. Crews demolish off-campus house where four University of Idaho students were stabbed to death in November 2022. And a new southern resident orca whale is born in the Puget Sound area. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Idaho Attorney General Raul Labrador says he will appeal Federal District Judge B. Lynn Windmill's decision Tuesday to grant a preliminary injunction against enforcing Idaho's new anti-trans health care law, which makes it a felony punishable by up to 10 years in prison for a doctor to give a transgender youth puberty blockers, hormones, or other treatments. Despite plaintiffs winning the injunction in part because of the harm the ban would cause transgender teens, Attorney General Labrador claimed Judge Windmill's ruling will harm teens. Labrador wrote in a statement Wednesday, "The federal judiciary once endorsed the eugenics movement and forced sterilization of intellectually disabled people. Similarly, Judge Windmill's ruling places children at risk of irreversible harm. History will not look kindly at this decision. We are taking immediate action to appeal this decision and are confident that correction will come." Labrador is one of three remaining defendants in the lawsuit, along with Governor Brad Little and Ada County Prosecutor Jan Bennett. Judge Windmill removed members of the Idaho Code Commission as defendants in the suit this week. Opponents of the law argued in the legislature transgender teens who are denied access to gender-affirming care are 63% more likely to commit suicide than those who have access to the care. They also say puberty blockers and hormone treatments are reversible. The 6th District U.S. Court of Appeals has allowed the bans on gender-affirming care for youth to go into effect in Tennessee and Kentucky. According to the Idaho Statesman, ACLU of Idaho Legal Director Richie Epping says the federal court in Idaho, quote, weighed the arguments on both sides carefully and plainly concluded that this kind of law should not be enforced. Other courts and decision makers across the United States would do well to closely heed this new Idaho decision. The decision by the 6th District Court of Appeals is being appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court. In his decision this week, Judge Windmill wrote he carefully considered the evidence that treatment for gender dysphoria, when provided in accordance to the World Professional Association for Transgender Health and the Endocrine Society guidelines, is safe, effective, and medically necessary for some adolescents. 15-year-old plaintiff Pam Poe reported her health greatly improved since beginning treatment that would be banned under the new Idaho law. 16-year-old plaintiff Jane Doe said in court documents sometimes she wished she did not exist. According to Judge Windmill's ruling, Jane Doe's treatment for gender dysphoria has greatly improved her mental health. Early this morning, contractors demolished the home at 1122 King Road in Moscow, where four University of Idaho students were stabbed to death in November of last year. The Daily News reports dozens of members of the media were on hand to watch the demolition. The University of Idaho took ownership of the three-story rental house after the landlord decided to donate the boarded-up building and crime scene to the UI. University of Idaho officials say the demolition is part of the healing process for the campus community. University of Idaho spokesperson Jody Walker told the Daily News, "The students have to live with the sight of that house every day. You can see it from campus." Accused quadruple murderer Brian Koberger remains in the Latah County Jail waiting for his trial. The FBI, the prosecutors, and defense team had access to the house to take pictures and measurements one last time before the demolition during the last month. The family of one of the murdered students, Kaylee Gonsalves, posted a message on Facebook saying, "It reached out to the Latah County Prosecutor's Office to stop the demolition, which it called madness. The family said a number of questions can no longer be answered now that the home is demolished." They wrote those questions include, for example, "What were all of the home's potential access points? Can you hear sounds coming from the top floors when you are on the bottom floor? What vantage points could have allowed Koberger to allegedly see into the house?" The Facebook post goes on to say, "We feel that the University of Idaho and the court has put us in a horrible position to have to voice our opinions. We all along have just wanted the King Road home to not be demolished and for us to have a trial date so that we can look forward to justice being served." You're tuned into the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
KRFP Community Radio is proudly supported by Ponderosa Rentals, providing quality home rentals since 2006.
Center for Whale Research workers Maya and Mark Sears announced they spotted a newborn southern resident orca in the Puget Sound this week. The calf is likely just a few days old, since whale researchers have not seen any newborn orca calves in the pod in recent encounters. The Center for Whale Research wrote in a Facebook post, "They saw the calf near the adult female orca J40, known as Suttles. The Sears believe J40 is the mother of the calf and is a first-time mother." According to Live Science, Whale Center scientist Ken Balcom said he believes the calf's mother may be either a young female, J36, or a more seasoned orca, J16, who, despite losing her first calf in December 2011, has three other surviving calves. The newborn whale was an encouraging development for the newly dubbed J-Pod group, as the female orca J32 died in the Strait of Georgia in the Salish Sea earlier this month. According to the Seattle Times, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Agency wildlife biologist Brad Hansen said, "The loss of J32 was a disturbing setback. We lost a lot of reproductive potential." Hansen said researchers saw the newest calf in the J-Pod near President Point in the Puget Sound. He said, "It's really, really good news. It also comes with the trepidation of how they're going to fare throughout the first few years of their life." According to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, the J-Pod is one of three southern resident orca pods which frequent the Salish Sea. The count also includes the K and L pods. The 2022 whale census reports there were a total of 73 orcas in three pods. The agency said the whale population peaked in 1995. The population declined by nearly 20% by the year 2000, which left 80 animals still living during the 2021 count. Hansen said, "In order for the population to grow, you really need them to have five or six successful calves, and that's not been happening in the population." According to the Whale Research Center, scientists report they have found about 67% of southern resident orca pregnancies end due to a lack of food. Recent studies show the resident females have lower hunting successes than the northern pods, and the diminishing and increasingly inbred southern resident population could be headed toward extinction due to threats such as dwindling Chinook salmon, which is their primary food, pollution, and underwater noise from passing ships, which makes it harder for the whales to locate food and communicate between pod members.
50 years ago today, President Richard Nixon signed the Endangered Species Act into law, establishing protections that saved species such as the bald eagle, peregrine falcon, and gray wolf from extinction. A new report from the Endangered Species Coalition highlights work that continues today to help many species recover, including the Chinook salmon in Northern California. Barry McCovey, Jr., with the Yurok Tribe's Fisheries Department, says the Act's protections paved the way.
I think it's made a huge difference for ecosystems and for wildlife. I know on the Klamath River, we've made a lot of progress on river and ecosystem restoration based off of protections granted through the Endangered Species Act.
The Klamath River Renewal Corporation will open up 400 miles of salmon habitat upriver by removing four dams on the Klamath near the California-Oregon border. Crews have already taken the first dam down, called Copco 2. In 2 weeks, workers will start breaching three more dams and draining the reservoirs, with complete removal expected by next winter. McCovey says, historically, the Klamath had the third largest salmon run on the West Coast, behind the Columbia and Sacramento rivers.
Millions of salmon used to migrate up the Klamath River, but because of mining or logging or diversions or agriculture and now climate change, the river has been severely impacted, and now only 10% of the historic numbers still exist in the Klamath River.
The Endangered Species Act works by preventing listed species from being harmed or killed, by protecting species habitats, and by creating plans to restore healthy populations. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
The 13th Annual Avenues for Hope Housing Challenge is an ongoing online fundraising campaign which includes 97 Idaho nonprofits who tackle homelessness in the state. The state has an affordable housing shortage. Avenues of Hope say there were 2,298 homeless people in Idaho, according to the midwinter point-in-time count, which was conducted in January. The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development conducts the point-in-time count annually to decide how many homeless Americans have no or little safe, stable housing. The group says more than 2,500 people have donated $1.2 million to the campaign, which ends December 31st. Avenues for Hope Housing is organized by the Home Partnership Foundation, a nonprofit branch of the Idaho Housing Challenge. Avenues of Hope provides critical resources to network nonprofits, matches gifts of at least $25 to any nonprofit in the network. Home Partnership Foundation Director Deanna Ward told the Idaho Press the nonprofits offer a wide range of services for people facing homelessness, including emergency shelter, homelessness prevention, domestic violence shelter, budgeting skills, and developing affordable housing. Ward said, "We hear pretty regularly from clients that have been helped and households that have succeeded in maintaining affordable rentals, maintaining their housing, kids that do better in school. We hear from parents and adults that are able to have a place to get ready for work and stay successful in their job, which is really difficult to do if you don't have a safe, warm home to go to every night." Ward said a feature of the campaign is a pool of $350,000 for multiple prize challenges for participating nonprofits who rely on Avenues for Hope Housing on a year-round basis. She said their work has far-reaching impacts on Idaho families and children. Avenues of Hope matches the first $2,500 raised by each nonprofit. She said the nonprofit that raises the most donations will receive the largest prize challenge of $5,000. Idaho Housing and Finance President Gerald M. Hunter said, "Access to affordable housing remains one of the greatest challenges in Idaho. The mission of our Avenues for Hope campaign is to raise the funds Idaho's network of housing support and shelter organizations need to assist those without a place to call home. People interested in making a donation to the Avenues of Hope can go to the website at avenuesofhope.com. Washington State University researcher Michael Skinner says his research in the field of epigenetics suggests obesity in modern times could be linked to ancestors' environmental exposure to toxins. Epigenetics is the study of cellular-level processes that turn on and off and change during a person's lifetime, mainly due to environmental factors. The Spokesman Review reports Skinner's main contribution to the field of epigenetics is that epigenetics can be inherited just like genes. He told the paper, "An environmental exposure of a chemical or some sort of trauma event can change the epigenetics in the parent. That will lead to epigenetic change in the sperm or the egg, which will carry epigenetics to the next generation." While working at his lab on the WSU campus in Pullman in 2005, Skinner found rats he exposed to a chemical known to stunt the growth of a fetus continued to show changes due to the chemical in future generations. Last month, Skinner released a proof-of-concept study which showed an epigenetic signature correlated to obesity, which could mean doctors can test early in life for a predisposition towards obesity. He took samples from the inside of cheeks of 22 sets of identical twins, one of whom was obese and the other who was not. Skinner found an epigenetic biomarker in up to 95% of the obese twins. Skinner said he hopes his research and the research of others could move medicine towards predicting illness rather than reacting to an illness once it happens. Skinner said, "We can find the biomarker before the obesity onset early in life, and there are preventative treatments we can do if we could detect that susceptibility." Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather forecast for the Moscow-Pullman area. Mostly cloudy tonight, low 33. Mostly sunny, high 45 tomorrow. Mostly cloudy Friday night, low 33. Partly sunny Saturday, high 44. 40% chance of rain Saturday night. Patchy fog after midnight. Snow level 4,900 feet. Otherwise, mostly cloudy, low 34. 30% chance of rain Sunday. Mainly before 10 a.m., patchy fog before 7 a.m., snow level 4,300 feet, otherwise mostly cloudy, high 41. New Year's Eve, Sunday night, 20% chance of rain, patchy fog after midnight, snow level 4,200 feet, mostly cloudy, low 31, and a 20% chance of rain Monday, New Year's Day, patchy fog before 7 a.m., snow level 3,700 feet, otherwise partly sunny, high 40. Currently 39. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Also, look for the end-of-the-year fundraising letter that may be in your mailbox, or you can read it at the KRFP.org website. There's other ways to help KRFP at KRFP.org. And also on the website, you can stream KRFP and listen to archived editions of any show from the last 2 weeks. I'm Lee Robartis. Jim Roach assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. Flash Talk Nation Radio is up next, followed by Flashpoints. And then we'll have Appearing Locally at 7:30, where we'll feature music from artists that are playing in the Moscow-Pullman area in the near future. At 8 o'clock, Maximum Rock and Roll. And at 9 o'clock, we will have the Academy in with Not Dark Yet, playing music for you through the evening. At 11 o'clock, Recorded Jam Band music, 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. with the show The Ride. Stay tuned for more.
Programming on KRFP is brought to you in part by One World Cafe, specializing in craft coffee, fresh baked pastries, artisan sandwiches, weekend brunch, wine, beer, and cider on tap. One World Cafe has a web calendar for upcoming live events and a campus location in the Janssen Engineering Building.
KRFP is dedicated to progressive values, including peace and human rights.
Welcome to Talk World Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson.